Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. On this hour, we'll be talking with Dr. Ilke Altintas. She is a professor at UC San Diego and is directly involved with the wildfire research in terms of tracking the fires over California right now. Wildfire is a program that takes advantage of the latest, greatest technology that we have at our disposal for really looking at what's happening in the fire scene from satellites, from sensors on the ground, basically as many angles we can, and integrating that into a whole system for analyzing fire. It's an integrated system for wildfire analysis.
Hello, Dr. Altintas.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. You know, it's funny, we were just bringing you on for today, and then we have a wildfire breakout less than 2 miles from our house in Boulder Creek. So it was very auspicious.
I saw that.
And we were able to look at it up close with your work with wildfire.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about wildfire and how it started and your involvement with it?
Yes. So in the early 2000s, at the San Diego Supercomputer Center, with the National Science Foundation funding, we were able to actually create a network in the back county of San Diego for scientists to have access to their instruments there. It involved some weather stations and other sensor stations, along with mountaintop cameras that could actually see and stream photos, initially, now videos, from the back county of San Diego. That was later on in 2003 and 2007 fires noticed by the fire agencies. And at some point, they were the only situational awareness tool that we can actually literally see the fire through. That combined with the growth of the weather station really gave us an inspiration initially to create more than just monitoring tools. It was great to see and measure this data, but we thought to ourselves, can we do something more? Can we visualize the information, or even more, can we use this data to create data-driven simulations or the models, predictive models of the fire?
Hmm. Now you're saying predictive models. Are you looking at predictive models over the next hour or 2 hours? Is it really tight predictive mill, or is it over a longer period of time?
It's really what will happen next. Now, it could be next 1 to 6 hours to come up with the rate of spread and the direction. Rate of spread means what speed the fire will be going in what direction. Mm-hmm. So we can now simulate, so to say, the next 6 hours based on weather forecasts and what we know about the fire and its dynamics right now. With the dynamics, we mean what the fire is doing, the internal weather and other things that we can learn about the fire as it's going.
I mean, like the terrain, the terrain and the type of environment that it's burning?
Yeah, these types of models have always been around. They have inputs as weather, local weather, where the fire is happening, the terrain or topography of the environment, and what we call fields, which is the vegetation buildup that can turn into burnable things for the fire. That's called fire field. We have databases. We had at that time satellite detections on the fires. We had connectivity to the back county of San Diego, but there was no system that really brought these together and integrated to create models, real-time models of the fire. And although there are some other systems available, it was really hard to bring the data together to be able to do it in real time. So our initial goal was to create a rate of spread model based on near real-time information every 15 minutes. And these days we can do it down to the minute as long as the data we are looking for is being updated and we have the latest information.
Hmm. Okay. Could you hold on for a sec? We just have to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm speaking with
Ilke Altintas, Dr. Ilke Altintas, on the project Wildfire, which is helping our firefighters get a more accurate understanding of the fire that they're fighting. We'll be right back after this commercial break. I guess you're just what I need. Welcome back to the Dr. Feature Show, where we're talking to Dr. Ilkay Altintas, one of the creators of Project Wi-Fire, which is an integrated approach to tracking and analyzing wildfires in California.
Live simulation of active fires.
Yes, and simulations. Now, you're saying that you not only can look at how a fire is spreading, but you can predict how it's going to spread. Is that right, Dr. Altintas?
Correct. Based on real-time data, we can actually create a predictive model of where the fire is going. It depends, of course, as good as the real-time data we are getting, because we depend a lot on the measurements. And
sure.
Right now, thanks to technology and advances in satellites and other means of data gathering, thanks to the Internet of Things, we can get better and better information. So it makes it even more possible now to have accurate models of the fire spread.
Okay, so like, let's look at the latest fires in Santa Rosa and here now in Santa Cruz County. What kind of information are you tracking to make predictions on these fires?
So through satellite fire detections, we get daily official perimeters, the boundaries of each fire.
Mm-hmm, the actual boundaries.
In addition to that, the actual boundaries that are announced. We definitely take those into account. But in addition to that, every 12 hours, we get satellite detection for where the exact fire is burning. That's really important for us because those points that the fire is detected, we treat them as the boundaries of the fire. We can generate boundaries from those fires, from those detections. And for each detection point, we can start a new fire model. So just like weather forecast in a storm, you see how weather is moving a little bit.
Uh-huh.
We can assimilate what we learned about the fire through these detections and through the weather updates and things like that. We can also assimilate or ingest that new data to learn about what the fire is doing itself and adjust the fire model according to that.
Yeah. Well, for example, the Santa Cruz fire. Can you see that it's going to avoid the town of Boulder Creek, for example, in our Santa Cruz fire?
I shouldn't actually say one way or another because it's been a few hours since I looked at the map. But what we noticed with what's going on in Santa Cruz Mountains is a really slow-moving fire. It's probably easier to control than what we experienced over the last week, thanks to the weather and what the fire is doing. So I can't, unfortunately, say one way or another because I don't want to inform anybody in the wrong direction.
Sure. What about the strategies of the firefighters themselves? Do you take their strategies into consideration in creating your predictive models? Like, for example, maybe they're building a fire break that would...
That's right. So another set of data we integrate is how the fire is being managed. If there is, let's say, a retardant drop in some area, we can create a boundary for a certain amount of time. So the models that we generate don't go in that direction. So we... as much as possible, we try to put the firefighting efforts and where the fire has already burned into account as we are doing these models, generating these models. And another thing about the tool is it really is a decision support tool. It's not a decision-making tool. So it's one more bit of information that fire agencies may or may not have already. To help them make better decisions, more data-driven decisions during these events.
So the boots on the ground are getting this data in the fire department, the fire people working on the fire, the airplanes, they're using your data to help create their plans?
We have worked with some fire departments over the last couple of years during some incidents that they looked at the maps that we are generating and made their decisions on these. Over the last week, everything was a bit of a, you know, we didn't want to be in the way of any of those. So I think there was some utilization of the tool, but we weren't directly involved. However, we generated those models to inform the public or whoever in any way we can help to cope with the devastating situation last week. Our team really came around on this.
Now, how big is your team down there?
We have a large team of researchers who contributed to the project. We have researchers from San Diego Supercomputer Center, the Qualcomm Institute, our engineering, mechanical and aerospace engineering department. We had a number of students. We have professional developers and researchers, PhD level researchers. And we also have some partners in the University of Maryland. So it takes a village to build a system like that. And on and off, we had in the order of probably 30 undergrad students, couple graduate students, some postdoctoral researchers, along with 5 to 6 staff members who's been on the project.
That's a pretty significant effort. Now, what satellites are you? You have access to many satellites, or a couple, or
we have access to, can say, all of the NASA satellites, and we bring in information on OVIRS and MODIS and GOES satellites. They all give different parts of the information, some of them more on the fire detections and smoke and what we call different bands of information for detection of different phenomena happening on the ground.
For example, you can look at infrared and you can see the actual heat of the fire and how where it's
exactly
where the hot spots are, that sort of thing.
Where the hot spots are, what kind of smoke is being generated, because the smoke related to, for instance, structure fires versus forest fires are quite different.
Like in Santa Rosa, you could tell when a neighborhood was burning by the smoke.
Exactly. And the health effects of those are also pretty different. When it's a structure fire, it's probably worse to breathe.
Yeah, so you can give warnings as to avoid the smoke if it's particularly toxic.
Exactly. We can generate the information that can lead to warnings. We try not to create unofficial information, but the information that someone can make that decision is available through the fire map web tool.
Now, I remember when I was watching the hurricane tracking last month, that there were predictive models that showed these little spaghetti tracks, like a half a dozen different spaghetti tracks of where the hurricane was likely to go over the next few days. Now, is tracking fire kind of like that, where you kind of guess in the simulations how it's going to proceed and what the likelihood of each simulation might be? Do you do several simulations for a fire?
Very much so, because what happens is, when you get information, that information has a bit of an uncertainty to it. Even if it's a measured information, you might not know exactly where the ignition point for the fire was, or you might not know exactly where the perimeter right now is. You can take into account that uncertainty and create a number of different fires based on that to come out with best and worst case models. So we can create what we call these ensemble models, that we create multiple models at once and show integrated maps based on that information.
Now, how evolved is your program so far? Is it fairly new? Do you see that it's a young program? It's got a ways to go before it's mature? Where are you in its evolution?
Yeah, I think we are on the way to being more mature. We were funded by the National Science Foundation in 2013, and the project is a research project initially, because when we started, most of this data wasn't even available. So it was almost a proof of concept. But over time, we noticed that a lot of the data we were really looking forward to having has become available, and our tool has made quite an impact. Over the last week, we were actually accessed by 300,000 plus visitors, unique visitors, with 3 million page hits. So this is a significant number, and it shows the need for it. So where we would like to go next is to grow the program in a way that we can actually bring in more data, bring in more information about different areas, and really test the sustainability of this program for public safety.
Great. Now, do you plan on covering fires across the nation or just California initially? What's your scope?
We can right now cover some information on the rest of the nation, but we have some special databases that we curated for California, especially the Southern California region. But with some tweaks and updates, it's potentially useful across the nation and even, I would say, across the globe. It's a think local, act global type of project. It's a typical tool that you can adopt for different geographical regions.
I assume you'll be getting more and more information from fire locations.
40 seconds.
Can you give us a website if people want to know more information?
The best way to see fire map is firemap.sdsc.edu.
And SD, the like San project, Diego, sorry.
San Diego Supercomputer, sc.edu. And the Wi-Fi project, the information on that is wifire.ucsd.edu.
Okay, good.
And we have Twitter and Facebook account for public to connect to.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that little download on that. Thanks again, Dr. Altinas, and have a good afternoon. Thanks for your info.
Thank you for hosting me.
You bet. Yeah, anytime. Bye-bye. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. That was interesting, eh, folks? That's the Project Wi-Fire that's at UC San Diego. Now, for the next half hour, we have Frank Schwartz on. Frank is a technologist, someone who's been using Wi-Fire to track specifically our fire in Boulder Creek and the fire in the Santa Rosa area to give us some more granular detail of what's happening. Welcome to the show, Frank.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, so you've been taking advantage of this Wi-Fire system and seeing how it works, and what have you been finding out with it?
It's very interesting. I use really pretty much two tools. One of them is Wi-Fire, and the other one is Google Earth. Google Earth has been used extensively by the firefighters over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years now to actually track what's going on. And what they do is they map all of the satellite information quite accurate right onto Google Earth. And, of course, Google Earth has all the altitude changes, the terrain. It's been a very good way to track the fires. And fires added some really new and interesting things to this, which is that they can track the material that's on the ground.
You mean like whether or not it's a neighborhood of houses or it's a thick forest or there's, you know, whether or not that area's burned recently, that sort of thing?
Found one up here is compacted timber litter, and the stuff is just deeply flammable. It's one of the most extreme fuels. That's actually what started fueling the Tubbs fire up in Santa Rosa. That stuff just went up, boom.
That started it off as a very hot fire then, right away.
Yes, it was a very hot fire, and it was highly burnable. It was very dry. The Wi-Fire has this mapped out fairly accurately. This is a major step forward for me to be able to actually look at this, because what I've been doing for the past 3 years is tracking fires, mostly in Lake County, because
It's been pretty bad there.
Lots of friends in Lake County.
Well, yes, that's for sure. That's been crazy.
And it's just been hit time and time again.
Yeah.
Wicked fires, including the one that destroyed Harbin. I've been doing that from a sort of a distance sometimes not so distant. I've been doing this every fire year for now for 3 years, and then all of a sudden, I wake up, go Monday morning, looked out my window, and I said, oh my God, the red sun.
Yeah, that's what we saw this morning, the red sun. Yep. Helicopters and the red sun. Yeah, felt like I was at the beginning of Apocalypse Now.
I know up here they were certainly going through apocalypse. I mean, so many people displaced, and the fires, they caught so rapidly and swept down. Like it was like a blowtorch coming from the Calistoga Tubbs area right through. It happened within hours.
Wow.
There wasn't even time to get a satellite tracking on that, because the satellites have their fixed passes, and so they don't update every moment. They only update every number of hours, depending on which
actually,
satellite.
Yeah, the Wi-Fire system, we learned from John Graham, who has been working on it, that their imagery updates every 12 hours at 3 p.m. and 3 a.m.
Right.
Their basic imagery, and they have a lot of detailed imagery that updates faster than that.
Yep. What Wi-Fire also did is to bring in the on-the-ground observations. We get this to some degree with some of the other Google Earth representations of it.
You mean on-the-ground observations, like people with writing reports and those reports getting integrated into the data from the satellites?
The firefighters actually will comment on what's called a centroid. These centroids are these squarish cones. Depending on the resolution of the satellite, they can be as fine grain as 375 meters, which is about 1,000 feet from side to side, all the way up to 4 kilometers. The finer the resolution, the more you can technically see. What they do is there's something called a confidence level, and there's a human being which says, yeah, that's burning out there. It's not just a satellite seeing something, it's burning. So at that point, the confidence level goes up and says 100% confidence.
I guess they can also report the nature of the burn, how hot it looks, and whether or not it's red or orange, and that kind of thing, how much smoke there is.
Different kinds of detections. One is the kind of detection is performed by what's called the VIRS satellite, and those say there is a fire, there's something happening here, and probably a fire. And we're going to try and pinpoint it fairly accurately. The VIRS will do 375 meters. The other one is the intensity of the area. And they're usually a little bit broader, and the intensity will tell you how hot it's burning. One says the fire is, something's burning here, and the other one says it's burning really hot.
Yeah.
The heat is not measured normally in degrees. It's measured in megawatts.
Really?
Yeah, and there's a reason for that, is because they can't tell from a satellite how hot something is. All they can do is they can see there's an area, it has a certain kind of burnable going on there, and which has to be also, by the way, it has to be confirmed from the ground. But they can tell you that there's an emission, there's a bright energy emission going on there. So when you see the intensity maps that I post up on my site, on my Facebook page for this stuff, it's measuring the megawatts. And then on the ground, somebody there saying, oh yeah, I just reached 900 degrees. I saw this especially in the Santa Rosa fire. There was 900 to 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Hmm. Is that why the refrigerators and safes were melting? Because it was so hot?
Exactly right. Those kind of temperatures are just, you know, almost nothing will stand up to those temperatures.
Hmm. You said you have a Facebook page or that's dedicated to this kind of work?
Well, it's my regular Facebook page. But right now, I believe it's dedicated to this because during the fire season, when something happens, I just go all out. There's no other post than about fire, and I keep updating rather rapidly as I see a change going on.
Yeah.
The fire area is moving very, it's growing very slowly.
That's the fire in our neighborhood, right? That's the Bear Fire.
Yes.
You say it's growing very slowly. How slow is slow?
Right now, I'm only seeing one nice thing about Google Earth is that you can actually accurately measure distances with a ruler function.
We can see it from our place. I sent up a drone this morning to take a look at it, and we could see the ridge burning a couple ridges away, and it did look like the smoke was heading south at that time, about 10:30 this morning.
Well, the smoke is still heading south. The fire is heading north, but the smoke is heading south, and that has to do with how atmospherics work. It starts by the northbound fire smoke rising up, but then it changes atmospheric layers, and all of a sudden, the smoke's headed south.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, Boulder Creek is west, I guess, of the fire, huh?
Yes. It's west and south.
Okay, and the fire's heading north. So that's good. That's looking good for us anyway, right?
How many hours has it been now? About 5 or so?
Started last night.
Well, supposedly it started 10:30, 11:30 last night at a structure fire and a spread from there. And apparently they sent in some of the air support at dawn this morning.
Yeah, and in terms of how fast it spread, last night our friend Peter gave us a report at 4:30 a.m. that it was 30 acres. And then when we got up this morning at 7:30 to helicopters, it had grown to 150 acres. I don't know what it's at now.
It's at 200 now.
Now it's at 200.
And most of that growth is in the northward direction, but it's only been twice about 9/10 of a mile. That's a very slow-moving fire.
Mm-hmm. So it traveled 9/10 of a mile since last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, and in terms of being able to visualize it, a square mile is 640 acres, 680 acres, something like that. So we're talking about something that is a pretty big neighborhood size. It's not consuming the whole mountain or anything.
Though the town of Boulder Creek is only about 3 or so miles away, then 3 or 4 miles from that. So it's moving away from the town. That's good, at a very slow rate.
And part of that slowness has to do with the ground material. And if I go like onto Wi-Fi right now and look at the ground material, it's mostly what they call timber understory, which burns pretty slow.
Well, I guess that's good in terms of containing it. I guess that's not so good in terms of knowing that it's out.
Well, you know, once something's burned out, what else happens is the intensity, well, we won't see the number of centroids, the fire centroids, little squares, they won't increase. And eventually they start to age. And the Google Earth tool actually shows the little centroids as aging, and they change color. And then the intensity starts to get cooler and cooler, and eventually it disappears. Satellite map.
Can you hold on a second, Frank? We've got to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Frank Schwartz about tracking the fires here in Boulder Creek area and in Santa Rosa. This is the Dr. Beecher Show. We'll be right back.
Oh,
Welcome back to the Dr. Fisher Show. We're talking to Frank Schwartz, who's been a fire tracker using the latest tools for looking at how wildfires are spreading. Now, Frank, have you found that you've been able to, the Santa Rosa fire was quite large, relatively speaking, where you find that it was that your information was helpful in having people evacuate in the right time ahead of the schedule, ahead of the fire?
Well, you know, actually, it's often when an evacuation notice has been given, especially over such large areas, there are people who say, do I really need to go? And, you know, and there's a valid viewpoint on that because of looting. So a lot of the question will be, you know, is the fire really moving in my direction? And often the answer is no, it isn't. The reason they issue these kinds of larger evacuation notices is because if I run a wildfire simulation, I will go for worst-case scenarios. And the worst-case scenarios will tell me that an area could be under threat, but it doesn't mean it will be under threat.
For example, in the Bear Fire, you have, like, my neighborhood, which is south of the fire, as the fire heads north, in an evacuation area. And that's because you have a circle of over 4 miles evacuation around the fire on all directions, right? And that's the worst case scenario.
Well, that was what the sheriff declared, as it was an evacuation notice area. But the fact is the fire is not moving in that direction.
So that would suggest that it's a mandatory evacuation area, right? Or is it mandatory or is it voluntary?
As far as I'm mandatory.
Mandatory? Yeah. Okay, now how long does that stay into effect? I mean, I can't go home?
They haven't issued anything, and they probably won't, because the fire is really not moving in that direction. It's more of a safety thing, and allow various emergency vehicles to get through for doing the firefighting.
Yeah, way it strikes me is that there are a lot of roads that are damaged in the area because of the storms last year, and some of them are under repair right now, so it's a little dicey in terms of just regular general access. And since they're trying to get firefighting equipment up there, they have serious concerns with routing traffic that is not directly related to fighting the fire. So probably a lot of the evacuation has to do with that issue.
You're probably right. Up here during the Taos fires, they had to actually just focus on evacuation because it was happening so fast. They couldn't even focus on fighting or containing the fire, except on spot actions. There were so many people involved, and we're talking about over 20,000 people.
Wow.
How did that affect you, Frank, in your area? You know, all those people?
The fire came to within 6.8 miles of our location initially. We were in Sebastopol, and then it stopped and started to head a little bit northward, a little bit southward, but not more, anymore west. Then it turned back on itself and started crawling up Mount St. Helena, which it's still doing.
So it's still on Mount St. Helena. Oh, yeah. What is the status of the fire now up there?
Tubbs is considered, I think, about 75% contained now. And it doesn't appear that it's ever going to crest St. Helena. It came darn close because St. Helena is at 4,300 feet, I think, on that side, and the fire came up to 3,800. And again, this is something I can track via the Google Earth terrain capabilities, but it stopped.
Okay.
So things are looking good now.
Yeah, the only area that's really not looking good right now is still Sonoma Valley. Kenwood and Mayacamos Ridge, Mountain Ridge area is still, it's burning. It's unbelievable. Still burning after a week.
Wow.
Is there any sign of precipitation coming?
Well, Thursday is supposed to be a big rain day.
It couldn't come soon enough at this point, huh?
I figured they'd have it all, you know, pretty much under control, but the Sonoma Valley area between Santa Rosa and Sonoma, the city of Sonoma, has been just hard, tough.
If any of you folks out there would like to know how to track fires or know more about this sort of stuff, give us a call now. Frank's been doing it for a while and could give you some tips on it. It's 831-479-1080. And speaking of which, Frank, what tools do you recommend if people want to have a hand at looking at wildfires? What would you suggest?
Well, you know, the wildfire is a really interesting and all-encompassing tool. If you're looking for, like, really detailed information because you have a home and maybe immediately under threat,
yes,
the way that Google Earth tracks it is really irreplaceable. There was just a satellite update on the fire there. Let's see. And,
so you just go to Google Earth? You just call up your Google Earth app?
Make sure you have Google Earth installed on your device. And then
this is as opposed to Google Maps. This is Google Earth. This is the actual rotating globe program.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because it's very accurate. Then you go to Google itself and search out Active Fires Google Earth. And you will come to, I think the first link on that search will lead you to the data sets. And there's a comprehensive data set on that page, which says basically it's everything. And it says you can download, call KML. And you download that and then open it in Google Earth. And all of a sudden, you're there. You're using the same thing that a lot of the firefighters are using to see things.
Mm-hmm. So I've got, KML descriptions, fire detections, fire radiative power, large...
There's something called Bill at the bottom.
Okay, fire weather. Okay, we have a caller, Mrs. Future?
We do. We've got a couple of callers. We're going to start with Linda in Oregon. Yeah. So let me just lock Frank in. Hello, Linda in Oregon. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Hi, Linda.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about the fire that we've had up here all summer. I don't know if you've heard about it.
Oh, sure. We actually were there, too. We were in Oregon for the eclipse, which is really, it was blazing out of control about that time.
Well, it's still going. It's now 191,000 acres, takes up two counties. It is contained 97%, but they are having flare-ups and hot spots still that they're trying to get under control. So we were under an evacuation notice for a month. We had everything in our car for a month.
Oh, man.
So you were under notice, but you didn't have to evacuate? You just had to be prepared?
No, the city of Brookings and Harbor were be prepared, but they did have level 3 evacuations all around here, and there were people out of their houses 3 weeks who didn't know what they were going to come back to.
Now, what are the levels of evacuation? 1, 2, 3.
One is to get ready. Two is to be ready to go in any notice, and three is go now.
Okay, so go now. Hmm. All right, and so you're still under evacuation notice where you are?
Oh, no, not now. Mm-hmm. We were for a month. For 4 weeks, we were from the end, the middle of August, about the middle of September, toward the end of September.
Okay.
So it started in the wilderness, the Siskiyou Mountains, by lightning. Mm-hmm. And I first spotted it back in July. It was just an acre, half an acre, actually. But they didn't put it out. The problem with the Forestry Service and in the wilderness, their policy is let it burn. Mm. They did. So
there he goes. Huh. Do you have any questions for Frank about tracking this?
Yeah, and also we do have a few other callers, let's... plan that in.
We're okay, thanks.
Just about out of time.
All right, well, good.
So thanks, Linda, for your call. And boy, it's a really crazy year this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good luck with your situation.
All right. Yeah. We're going to go to, hello, Bobby in the air. How are you?
Hey, Bobby.
Good. Well, I'm fine.
Yeah, you're in San Francisco, right?
I'm in San Francisco, but I had property that burned in Santa Rosa. It was on Old Redwood Highway, right across the street from the Coffee Lane fire there. Mm-hmm. And the fire came down through Mark West Springs Road, and it burned the Carl Newman High School, which was a half a mile up the street. And then there was a house about 1,000 yards up the street, an old house. It was a 1924 California Craftsman bungalow, two-bedroom.
Oh, boy.
And it was a rental unit, and so they were fortunate to get out, and,
So your renters are out of there now, huh?
Yes.
And the house is gone.
I looked on Google Maps, and, it's there's just a gray ash area there.
God.
Sorry.
And then my mother's house... old house.
We're just about out of time, Bobby, just so you know.
All right.
We're in the last 40 seconds of the show.
My advice is this. At Costco, they have a Sentry safe that has a USB port, and you can put your drive in there, and it's guaranteed for 1 hour of fire. Or the IO safe, you can buy a 4 terabyte.
All right. Yeah.
Okay,
thanks,
well,
Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby. And
sorry for your loss.
Yes, sorry, so sorry about that. And thank you, Frank. Thank you, Frank, for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank
and
you. Yeah.
Good luck, everyone, with the fire. May we all have a happy tomorrow.
Yeah. All right, folks, Dr. Future Show on KSEO Santa Cruz. And stay safe out there. Bye-bye.